Chapter 7. Mills lowered the hands holding the extinct and even cold pipe before his big face. H'M, shoot an arrow into that old man's heart like this? But was there anything done? A terracotta bust, I believe. Good? I don't know. I rather think it's in this house. A lot of things have been sent down from Paris here when she gave up the pavilion. When she goes up now she stays in hotels, you know. I imagine it is locked up in one of these things, went on Blunt, pointing towards the end of the studio, where amongst the monumental presses of dark oak lurked the shy dummy which had worn the stiff robes of the Byzantine Empress, and the amazing hat of the Earl, rakishly. I wondered whether that dummy had traveled from Paris to, and whether with or without its head. Perhaps that head had been left behind, having rolled into a corner of some empty room in the dismantled pavilion. I represented it to myself very lonely, without features, like a turnip, with a mere peg sticking out where the neck should have been. And Mr. Blunt was talking on. There are treasures behind these locked doors, brocades, old jewels, unframed pictures, bronzes, chinoiseries, japonneries. He growled as much as a man of his accomplished manner and voice could growl. Don't suppose she gave away all that to her sister, but I shouldn't be surprised if that timid rustic didn't lay a claim to the lot for the love of God and the good of the church. Dot dot, and held on with her teeth too, he added graphically. Mill's face remained grave. Very grave. I was amused at those little venomous outbreaks of the fatal Mr. Blunt. Again I knew myself utterly forgotten. But I didn't feel dull, and I didn't even feel sleepy. That last strikes me as strange at this distance of time, in regard of my tender years, and of the depressing hour which precedes the dawn. We had been drinking that straw-colored wine too, I won't say like water, nobody would have drunk water like that, but, well. Dot dot, and the haze of tobacco smoke was like the blue mist of great distances seen in dreams. Yes, that old sculptor was the first who joined them in the sight of all Paris. It was that old glory that opened the series of companions of those morning rides, a series which extended through three successive Parisian springtimes, and comprised a famous physiologist, a fellow who seemed to hint that mankind could be made immortal, or at least everlastingly old, a fashionable philosopher and psychologist who used to lecture to enormous audiences of women with his tongue in his cheek, but never permitted himself anything of the kind when talking to Rita, that surly dandy cabinal, but he only once, from mere vanity, and everybody else at all distinguished, including also a celebrated person who turned out later to be a swindler. But he was really a genius. Dot dot, all this according to Mr. Blunt, who gave us all those details with a sort of languid zest covering a secret irritation. Apart from that, you know, went on Mr. Blunt, all she knew of the world of men and women, I mean till Alliger's death, was what she had seen of it from the saddle 2 hours every morning during 4 months of the year or so. Absolutely all, with Alliger self-denyingly on her right hand, with that impenetrable air of guardianship. Don't touch. He didn't like his treasures to be touched, unless he actually put some unique object into your hands with a sort of triumphant murmur, look close at that. ... Of course I only have heard all this. I am much too small a person, you understand, to even. Dot, he flashed his white teeth at us most agreeably, but the upper part of his face, the shadowed setting of his eyes, and the slight drawing in of his eyebrows gave a fatal suggestion. I thought suddenly of the definition he applied to himself. Maricane, Catholic, a gentle homme completed by that startling live by my sword uttered in a light drawing room tone tinged by a flavor of mockery lighter even than air. He insisted to us that the first and only time he had seen Alliger a little close was that morning in the Bois with his mother. His Majesty, whom God preserve, then not even an active pretender, flanked the girl, still a girl, on the other side, the usual companion for a month past or so. Alliger had suddenly taken it into his head to paint his portrait. A sort of intimacy had sprung up. Mrs. Blunt's remark was that of the two striking horsemen Alliger looked the more kingly. The son of a confounded millionaire soap boiler, commented Mr. Blunt through his clenched teeth. Man absolutely without parentage. Without a single relation in the world. Just a freak. That explains why he could leave all his fortune to her, said Mills. The will, I believe, said Mr. Blunt moodily, was written on a half sheet of paper, with his device of an Assyrian bull at the head. What the devil did he mean by it? Anyway, it was the last time that she surveyed the world of men and women from the saddle. Less than 3 months later, Dot Alliger died and... Dot murmured Mills in an interested manner. And as he had to dismount, broke in Mr. Blunt grimly. Ismount right into the middle of it. Down to the very ground, you understand. I suppose you can guess what that would mean. She didn't know what to do with herself. As he had never been on the ground. She. Dot, aha, said Mills. Even a. If you like, retorted Mr. Blunt, in an unrefined tone that made me open my eyes, which were well opened before, still wider. He turned to me with that horrible trick of his of commenting upon Mills, as though that quiet man whom I admired, whom I trusted, and for whom I had already something resembling affection had been as much of a dummy as that other one lurking in the shadows, pitiful and headless in its attitude of alarmed chastity. Nothing escapes his penetration. He can perceive a haystack at an enormous distance when he is interested. I thought this was going rather too far, even to the borders of vulgarity, but Mills remained untroubled and only reached for his tobacco pouch. But that's nothing to my mother's interest. She can never see a haystack, therefore she is always so surprised and excited. Of course, Dona Rita was not a woman about whom the newspapers insert little paragraphs. But Alliger was the sort of man. A lot came out in print about him, and a lot was talked in the world about her, and at once my dear mother perceived a haystack, and naturally became unreasonably absorbed in it. I thought her interest would wear out. But it didn't. As he had received a shock, and had received an impression by means of that girl. My mother has never been treated with impertinence before, and the aesthetic impression must have been of extraordinary strength. I must suppose that it amounted to a sort of moral revolution. I can't account for her proceedings in any other way. When Rita turned up in Paris a year and a half after Alliger's death, some shabby journalist, smart creature, hit upon the notion of alluding to her as the heiress of Mr. Alliger. The heiress of Mr. Alliger has taken up her residence again amongst the treasures of art in that pavilion so well known to the elite of the artistic, scientific, and political world, not to speak of the members of aristocratic, and even royal families. Dot dot apostrophe, you know the sort of thing. It appeared first in the Figaro, I believe. And then at the end a little phrase. She is alone. Apostrophe apostrophe, she was in a fair way of becoming a celebrity of a sort. Daily little allusions and that sort of thing. Heaven only knows who stopped it. There was a rush of old friends into that garden, enough to scare all the little birds away. I suppose one or several of them, having influence with the press, did it. But the gossip didn't stop, and the name stuck too, since it conveyed a very certain, and very significant, sort of fact, and of course the Venetian episode was talked about in the houses frequented by my mother. It was talked about from a royalist point of view with a kind of respect. It was even said that the inspiration and the resolution of the war going on now over the Pyrenees had come out from that head. Dot dot, some of them talked, as if she were the guardian angel of legitimacy. You know what royalist gush is like. Mr. Blunt's face expressed sarcastic disgust. Mills moved his head the least little bit. Apparently he knew. Well, speaking with all possible respect, it seems to have affected my mother's brain. I was already with the Royal Army, and of course there could be no question of regular postal communications with France. My mother hears or overhears somewhere that the heiress of Mr. Alliger is contemplating a secret journey. All the noble salons were full of chatter about that secret naturally. So she sits down and pens an autograph. Madam, inform that you are proceeding to the place on which the hopes of all the right-thinking people are fixed. I trust to your womanly sympathy with a mother's anxious feelings, etc., etc., and ending with a request to take messages to me and bring news of me. Dot dot the coolness of my mother. Most unexpectedly, Mills was heard murmuring a question which seemed to me very odd. I wonder how your mother addressed that note? A moment of silence ensued. Hardly in the newspaper style, I should think, retorted Mr. Blunt, with one of his grins that made me doubt the stability of his feelings, and the consistency of his outlook in regard to his whole tale. Why, mother's maid took it in a fiacre very late one evening to the pavilion, and brought an answer scrawled on a scrap of paper. Write your messages at once, and signed with a big capital R. So my mother sat down again to her charming writing desk, and the maid made another journey in a fiacre just before midnight. And 10 days later or so, I got a letter thrust into my hand at the Avanzadas just as I was about to start on a night patrol, together with a note asking me to call on the writer so that she might allay my mother's anxieties by telling her how I looked. It was signed R only, but I guessed at once and nearly fell off my horse with surprise. You mean to say that Dona Rita was actually at the royal headquarters lately? Exclaimed Mills, with evident surprise. Why, we everybody thought that all this affair was over and done with. Absolutely. Nothing in the world could be more done with than that episode. Of course, the rooms in the hotel at Tolosa were retained for her by an order from royal headquarters. Two garret rooms, the place was so full of all sorts of court people, but I can assure you that for the 3 days she was there she never put her head outside the door. General Mongrovejo called on her officially from the king. A general, not anybody of the household, you see. That's a distinct shade of the present relation. He stayed just 5 minutes. Some personage from the foreign department at headquarters was close at it for about a couple of hours. That was of course business. Then two officers from the staff came together with some explanations or instructions to her. Then Baron H., a fellow with a pretty wife, who had made so many sacrifices for the cause, raised a great to-do about seeing her, and she consented to receive him for a moment. They say he was very much frightened by her arrival, but after the interview went away all smiles. Who else? Yes, the Archbishop came. Half an hour. This is more than is necessary to give a blessing, and I can't conceive what else he had to give her. But I am sure he got something out of her. Two peasants from the upper valley were sent for by military authorities, and she saw them too. That friar who hangs about the court has been in and out several times. Well, and lastly, I myself. I got leave from the outposts. That was the first time I talked to her. I would have gone that evening back to the regiment, but the friar met me in the corridor and informed me that I would be ordered to escort that most loyal and noble lady back to the French frontier as a personal mission of the highest honor. I was inclined to laugh at him. He himself is a cheery and jovial person, and he laughed with me quite readily, but I got the order before dark all right. It was rather a job, as the Elephantists were attacking the right flank of our whole front, and there was some considerable disorder there. I mounted her on a mule and her maid on another. We spent one night in a ruined old tower occupied by some of our infantry, and got away at daybreak under the Elephantist shells. The maid nearly died of fright, and one of the troopers with us was wounded. To smuggle her back across the frontier was another job, but it wasn't my job. It wouldn't have done for her to appear in sight of French frontier posts in the company of Carlist uniforms. She seems to have a fearless streak in her nature. At one time, as we were climbing a slope absolutely exposed to artillery fire, I asked her on purpose, being provoked by the way she looked about at the scenery, a little emotion, eh? And she answered me in a low voice. Oh, yes. I am moved. I used to run about these hills when I was little. Apostrophe apostrophe and note. Just then the trooper close behind us had been wounded by a shell fragment. He was swearing awfully, and fighting with his horse. The shells were falling around us about 2 to the minute. Luckily the Elfensis shells are not much better than our own. But women are funny. I was afraid the maid would jump down, and clear out amongst the rocks, in which case we should have had to dismount and catch her. But she didn't do that. She sat perfectly still on her mule and shrieked. Just simply shrieked. Ultimately we came to a curiously shaped rock at the end of a short wooded valley. It was very still there and the sunshine was brilliant. I said to Dona Rita, "We will have to part in a few minutes. I understand that my mission ends at this rock." Apostrophe apostrophe and she said, "I know this rock well. This is my country." Apostrophe, then she thanked me for bringing her there and presently three peasants appeared, waiting for us, two youths and one shaven old man, with a thin nose like a sword blade and perfectly round eyes, a character well known to the whole Carlist army. The two youths stopped under the trees at a distance, but the old fellow came quite close up and gazed at her, screwing up his eyes, as if looking at the sun. Then he raised his arm very slowly, and took his red boina off his bald head. I watched her smiling at him all the time. I dare say she knew him as well as she knew the old rock. Very old rock. The rock of ages and the aged man landmarks of her youth. Then the mules started walking smartly forward, with the three peasants striding alongside of them, and vanished between the trees. These fellows were most likely sent out by her uncle the cura. It was a peaceful scene, the morning light, the bit of open country framed in steep stony slopes, a high peak or two in the distance, the thin smoke of some invisible caseros, rising straight up here and there. Far away behind us the guns had ceased, and the echoes in the gorges had died out. I never knew what peace meant before. Nor since, muttered Mr. Blunt after a pause, and then went on. The little stone church of her uncle, the holy man of the family, might have been round the corner of the next spur of the nearest hill. I dismounted to bandage the shoulder of my trooper. It was only a nasty long scratch. While I was busy about it, a bell began to ring in the distance. The sound fell deliciously on the ear, clear like the morning light. But it stopped all at once. You know how a distant bell stops suddenly. I never knew before what stillness meant. While I was wondering at it, the fellow holding our horses was moved to uplift his voice. He was a Spaniard, not a Basque, and he trolled out in Castilian, that song you know. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.